morning, Cedar Creek. Welcome to, this is May now. It's May 3rd when you're watching this, and we are getting deeper and deeper into spring, closer to summer. Hopefully, we're getting closer and closer to the time when we can all be here together. It's been quite a thing for all of us, I know, as we've gone through these unprecedented times, but it's good that we can continue to just to seek the Lord together, and I hope that's what's happening as we try to do church in a very different way, in a very virtual way, as opposed to a hands-on way. But God is no different, and it's fun to remember that even though we can't be close together, we can't see each other, we can't talk and shake hands and hug like we might have. God doesn't go anywhere. This has not caught him by surprise, and it hasn't even changed what God is doing with you, with me. It looks different. It's happening a little bit differently, but God's plans don't change. And that's actually what we're going to talk about here for the next 3 weeks. We're going to spend 3 weeks here as we move into closer to our summer-long series, which will be going through the book of Romans for the summer. That starts on Memorial Day weekend. But for the next 3 weeks, what we're going to do is look at what the reality of what I just said, that God is sovereign. And that word sovereign is a word that we don't use a whole lot. And because we don't use it a whole lot, we might not know exactly what it means. You know, you think about maybe the Queen of England is a sovereign, or, you know, sovereign nation. We might use it in those terms. But we don't use the word sovereign a whole lot just in our ordinary conversations. It's not something that describes something that we deal with on a regular basis. So we might not know what it means, but it is a word that is used to describe God quite a bit in the Bible. Several times that word sovereign or some form of it shows up in relationship to God. So it's a word that describes God. It's hard for us to understand maybe because we don't see it a whole lot, but it very much applies to God. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at, what does that mean? God is sovereign. What does that even mean? And then, more specifically, what does it mean to us? What does it mean as our lives play themselves out, okay? So that's what we're going to do here. Now, to kind of just start it off, I want to read some verses, one in the Old Testament, two in the New Testament, that use that word sovereign in relationship to God, and then look at those verses and try to figure out a little bit, okay, what does that mean? When God is sovereign, what does that mean? So I'm just going to read these verses, and then we'll talk about them a little bit. The first one is in Isaiah 40, verse 10. It says, "See, the sovereign Lord comes with power, and his arm rules for him. See, his reward is with him, and his recompense accompanies him. The sovereign Lord comes with power, his arm rules for him. His reward is with him, and his recompense accompanies him." That's in Isaiah 40, verse 10. Here's another one in the New Testament when the very young church was praying, and this is how they refer to God. This is in Acts chapter 4. I'm going to start reading in verse 24. It says, "When they heard this, they raised their voices together in prayer to God. 'Sovereign Lord,' they said," there's that word, "'sovereign Lord, you made the heavens and the earth and the sea and everything in them. You spoke by the Holy Spirit through the mouth of your servant, our father David. Why do the nations rage and the peoples plot in vain? The kings of the earth take their stand, and the rulers gather together against the Lord and against his anointed one." So there, in the New Testament, when the church is talking to God and talking about him, they address him as sovereign Lord. So they use that word. Here's one more. This is in the book of Jude, a little tiny book way in the back of the New Testament. It's only one chapter. And in verse 4 here, again, it's talking about God and talking about how we interact with God, how people view him, how we interact with him. It says, "For certain men whose condemnation was written about long ago have secretly slipped in among you. They are godless men who changed the grace of our God into a license for immorality and deny Jesus Christ, our only sovereign and Lord." And so there again, he's talking about people who are conducting themselves in a certain way in relationship to God. These ones are denying God, and as they deny God, they're denying the only sovereign. Does that make sense? And so we see here again God referred to, that word sovereign, attached to God. So, and again, these are just three places in the Bible where it uses that word, but I think that they help us to understand a little bit what it means. So, okay, God is sovereign. What does that mean? Well, that word that we saw as sovereign there is translated into different words at different times. One of the words, especially in the New Testament, that it is translated as is master. Okay, now that's a word that we understand a little bit more. A master is someone who is in charge, someone who is in control, the master of a situation. If you're mastering a situation, it means that you've got it under control. I understand it. I can handle it. I can do it. Master is someone who tells other people what to do. That word is oftentimes translated Lord. And so Lord, that's, again, one we don't use a whole lot. But again, there's this authority, there's this power. And it always refers to some form of ruling, which kind of makes sense. We understand, like, the Queen of England is a sovereign, and so the Queen rules, right? And so that's what this word is kind of capturing. In fact, the Greek word in the New Testament that is most often translated sovereign or master is where we get the word despot, which is someone who has complete, unfettered control. They can do what they want, when they want, whenever they want. They have complete and total control. And so we see that this idea of sovereign, God is sovereign, it has to do with ruling, being in charge, being in control. But these verses that we read help us to kind of fill in that even a little bit more. So let's just look at them quickly. I'm going to go back now to Isaiah 40, verse 10. It says, "See, the sovereign Lord comes with power, and his arm rules for him." He comes with power. And I think that that's part of what this word means. If God is sovereign, he rules. And part of that ruling is he has power. He has the ability to command. He has the ability to create and to control circumstances. There is a power there. So he's a ruler that has the ability to do certain things. He's not just, okay, I'd like to see this happen, and we'll see if it does. No, he can make things happen. Part of this idea of God as a sovereign is he can make things happen. There is power there. Let's look at Acts, because I think this tells us, fills in another little piece of what it means for God to be sovereign. Here in Acts 4:24, it says, "Sovereign Lord, they said, you made the heaven and the earth and the sea and everything in them." You made the heaven and the earth and the sea and everything in them. In other words, this is saying what we see oftentimes in the Bible, that God created the world. Because he created it, he owns it. Because he owns it, he has the right to control it. And so part of being sovereign is there is not just the ability to rule, but there's a right to rule. God can rule because it's the right thing for him to do. He has not just the ability to do it, but the right to do it, the authority to do it, if you will. It's a just authority. Sometimes people can take, I'm just going to take control of this situation, when they really have no right to do it. If God says he's sovereign and he can rule, it's just, it's fair. He has the right to do it because he made everything. He owns everything. So we see that God has the ability to rule. He has the right to rule. He has the authority and the power to rule. But maybe one more thing that we learn here in Jude, that last verse that we read, it talks about, it uses that word sovereign. But it says it in a different way. It says that they deny Jesus Christ, our only sovereign and Lord. Our only sovereign and Lord. And I think that's one more piece of what it means for God to be sovereign, is that his rule is exclusive. He doesn't share it. There isn't someone else who comes and takes over later on. It's not like God is in charge of this little bit of it, someone else is in charge of the rest. Or God is in charge for a while, and then he stops being in charge. No, he is sovereign. He's the only sovereign. So, where does that leave us? If we're going to define what it means for God to be sovereign, this is how I would define it. That God alone has the right and the power to rule. I'll say that again. God is sovereign. What that means is that God alone has the right and the power to rule, and to rule everything. He made the universe. He rules the stars. It says in the Psalms that he counts the stars. He knows them all by name. They follow the course that he's set for them. The heavens, the biggest universe, God alone has the right and the power to rule them. He rules this earth. And the physical characteristics of this earth, we see that when Jesus was here on earth. He could change physics. He could raise people from the dead. He could cause a fig tree to wither. He could, after he was raised, he kind of moved from place to place without the constraints of physics, without the constraints of time and space that you and I live in, the physical world that we live in. God alone has the right and the power to control it, to rule it. It says that God made the seasons. He determines when the spring is going to come. God set the boundaries for the ocean, it says. All of the physical world we see, all of the physical attributes of it, God controls them. He's the ruler. He is sovereign over all of it. He's sovereign over nations. We see that again and again and again. Psalm 2, we read it here in Acts 4, 24. You know, the nations plot together against you, but it doesn't matter at all. God is sovereign over nations. So, God has the right, God alone has the right and power to rule. That's what it means for him to be sovereign. But what we're going to talk about here for the next 3 weeks is God is sovereign over the universe, over the world, over nations, but where the rubber really meets the road is here. God is sovereign over me, over my life, over you, over your life. What does that mean? If God is sovereign over everything, that includes me and you, right? God created me. God created you. He put us in the place where we are. It says that God determined the time set for us and the exact places where we should live. So God is sovereign, not just over the universe, God is sovereign over my life, my times, your life, your times. That's really what we want to look at here for the next few weeks. What does that look like? How does that play itself out? God is this powerful, rightful ruler. And God alone has the right and the power to rule me, my life, my days, my time. We see that in the Psalms where God says, you know, I've determined, the number of my days has been set out. God knows what they are. So we're going to look here for the next few weeks on, okay, what does that mean for me as I live my life? What does that mean for you as you live your life, as God is sovereign over our lives? What we're going to do, how we're going to do that, is we're going to do three different character studies. We're going to look at three different people in the Bible, and we're going to see how God ruled sovereignly in their life. And we're going to look at three different people who kind of had different responses to it. One of them tried really hard to work with God. That's Joseph. That's what we're going to talk about today. Joseph was a guy in the Old Testament who believed in God, trusted God, wanted to work with God, wanted to follow God, was really trying hard and excited about God being sovereign in his life. How did it work out in his life? That's what we'll look at today. Next week, we're going to look at the complete opposite, someone who didn't try at all, and that's Samson, who just kind of went about his own business, kind of did things that when he wanted, how he wanted, really didn't respond to God too much or too well. But what did it look like for God to be sovereign in his life? The third week, we're going to look at someone who was kind of in between, which is where probably a lot of us are. Some ways, really tried to work with God. Some ways, really didn't try so much. That's Jonah, a guy who followed God but backed off and followed and backed off. So that's what we're going to do here for the next 3 weeks. So today, We're going to look at Joseph. And Joseph is the guy who is really, really trying hard to do what God wants him to do. He wants to follow God. He wants to be God's man in the world. He believes that God has a plan. He's doing his best. What does it look like for God to be sovereign? How does that play itself out, that God is the ruler of the life of a man who's really trying hard? And I want to just read this verse here in Habakkuk. Before we get to Joseph, this verse in Habakkuk, I think, kind of catches the spirit of this kind of person. And it's in Habakkuk chapter 3, verse 19. It says, "The sovereign Lord," there it is, there's this that word, "the sovereign Lord is my strength." In other words, because God is sovereign, it affects me. It makes me strong. He enables my feet he makes my feet like the feet of a deer. He enables me to go on the heights. Let me read that again. "The sovereign Lord is my strength. He makes my feet like the feet of a deer. He enables me to go on the heights." Here's a guy who recognizes, okay, God is sovereign. And what that does is as I go with him, as I respond well to that, my life is changed. He gives me strength. I'm like a deer. I can do things that I couldn't do otherwise because I'm cooperating with God. This is kind of the catches, I think, that the spirit or the kind of person that Joseph is, who wants to cooperate with God, wants to live his life recognizing that God is his sovereign, that God alone has the power and the ability to rule his life. I want to follow that. That's what we're talking about. So let's look at Joseph, look at his life here for a few minutes, and see how that played itself out. Now, the story of Joseph is found in Genesis, and it's Genesis starts with chapter 37 of Genesis, goes through the rest of the book through chapter 50. That sounds like a lot. It's not that much. You could read the whole thing this afternoon or sometime, and probably be good to do it. Just kind of read this, because we're not going to read all of it. We're just going to look at some bits of it here, okay? So let's just look at Joseph, at his life, as he tries to respond well to God. Joseph's life, as it played out, was kind of step by step, him doing the right thing. In fact, Joseph is one of the few people in the Bible that there isn't anything specific we're told that he did wrong. There's very few of those. Joseph, Daniel, most of the heroes of the Bible, we're told some glaring weaknesses. We're told about some horrible failures. We don't see that with Joseph. Not that they weren't there, but this is the picture of a man who pretty consistently obeyed the Lord, loved the Lord, followed the Lord. He really tried hard. What does that look like? Well, here in chapter 37, right at the beginning of the story of Joseph, we see that Joseph did the right thing. In verse 2, it says, "Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And he brought their father a bad report about them." Now, you may think that's a bad thing, but if you read the story, his brothers weren't great guys. And they did things they weren't supposed to do. They were supposed to be out tending the sheep, and they were off doing these other things. Joseph did the right thing. He reported back to his dad, "Hey, Dad, these guys aren't doing it." Now I understand that there's ways to do that well, but Joseph had the courage to respond to his dad, even in the face of his big brothers who could beat him up. He was not afraid of that. He did the right thing. Joseph understood that God had plans for him, and Joseph cooperated with those plans. As a young man, Joseph understood, you know what, God is working in my life. And still in chapter 37 here, I'm going to read a few verses. "Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, 'Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field, when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright, while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it.' His brothers said to him, 'Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?' And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. 'Listen,' he said, 'I had another dream, and this time the sun and the moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me.'" He had 11 brothers. Joseph might not be the, he could use some tact and probably some cleverness, but he understood here. He saw, he recognized that God was talking to him about his life, and he accepted it. He believed it. He didn't hide it. He didn't say, no, this can't be me. He just said, holy smoke, I had a dream where you guys are going to bow down to me. I'm going to be ruler over you. And it wasn't to him like, oh, that can't happen, or he was going to make it happen. He just recognized that, I think, recognized God had a plan for him, and he was willing to cooperate with it. He embraced the plan that God had for him. It's a wonderful thing. If you're going to respond well to God as a sovereign, well, you're going to believe and you're going to recognize, well, this sovereign Lord has plans for my life, and I'm going to embrace them. I'm going to work with them. Joseph, we just keep going here and seeing what his life was like, how he worked hard, how he tried hard. He labored. He did things well. Here in Genesis 39, this is years later when Joseph now was in Egypt, and he's in the household of a man, and it says this: the Lord was with Joseph, and he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. Joseph was in charge. He didn't concern himself with anything except the food that he ate. Joseph was really, really good at what he did. He worked hard. He was skillful. He didn't slack off. He didn't, you know, he wasn't like his brothers. He saw the work that he had to do, and he labored at it. He worked at it. Here's a guy who just was a good hard worker. He was a man of character. In verse 9 here of chapter 39. Joseph, in his master's house, he's been put in charge of everything. He's kind of running the show. His master's wife recognizes Joseph. He's a young man. He's handsome. He's skillful, and she kind of falls in love with him and would like to fall in love with him for a day or two. And she approaches him, and he does this. He says, no, I will not take you. I will not have an affair with you. I won't do it. Even though nobody might know, I'm not going to do it. And he says in verse 9, no one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? Joseph was a man of character. He recognized, wow, this woman is coming on to me, and I'm sure that when that happens, a man can feel very puffed up with himself and be very drawn to that and desire that. And he could say, you know what, I've worked hard and all that stuff, but he was a man of character. I will not sin, he says, against God. My master has given me everything, but you are his wife. You're not mine. I will not take you. I will not be with you. Though nobody knows it, even though you're asking for it, I'm not going to do it. Why? Because it's not right. That's character. Joseph was a man of great character, great skill and great character. And in all of it, he trusted and honored God, not himself. One of the problems with being a skillful person, a person of character, is it can very easily lead to pride. And we begin to think that we've done this ourselves. Somehow I am responsible for my own skills. I am responsible for my own life. Joseph didn't have that. Here in chapter 40, we see that Joseph didn't do that. All through this, he was understanding that the things he was able to do, he trusted and he honored God. He was willing to recognize in all of it, Lord, you alone are the ruler of my life, not me. Here now in chapter 40, he's been thrown into jail because this woman who he refused lied about him. His master got mad, threw him in jail. So here in jail, these two guys come to him. They've had dreams that they can't interpret. Joseph says this, Joseph said to them, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me your dreams. Here in jail, he says, hey, you guys have had dreams? Well, there's an interpretation to it. He could have said, I'm really good at this stuff. I can interpret dreams. And back in those days, they thought that there were people who were mystics, who were magicians, who could do this kind of stuff, who had special powers that they could control. And if you could do that, wow, you're a pretty important fella. Joseph could have taken credit for this, but he said, oh, no, God interprets dreams, and he probably will use me to help you to do it, but it's God, so go ahead and tell me your dream. We see the exact same thing happen a chapter later when Pharaoh has a dream. And Pharaoh talks to Joseph and says to him, this is Pharaoh, he says, but I have heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. So Pharaoh is saying to Joseph, hey, I've heard it said that you, Joseph, have this special ability. This is what Joseph said in chapter 41, verse 16. I cannot do it, Joseph replied to Pharaoh, but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires. When he could have, when people were inviting him to take credit for the things that he was able to do, he trusted and he honored God. No, it's not me. It's God. If I can do anything, it's because God has done it. And if he does it, he gets the credit, not me. That's a good man. Joseph did not hold grudges. He loved people when he had the right to not love them. As we see the story of Joseph, he's in Egypt at all because his brothers, we saw earlier that they hated him, his brothers have sold him. They talked about killing him. Instead, they said, let's make some money on him. They sold him. 17 young boy. His brothers, who should have protected him, his older brothers, sold him to be a slave. Horrible. Joseph could have hated them, but he didn't. Here, years and years and years later, when his brothers now have come to him and Joseph has risen to power in Egypt, his brothers come to him and they're bowing down to him, and he had the power at that point to get his vengeance, to get revenge. Joseph had the power to get revenge, and he didn't do it. Here in chapter 45, toward the end of this story, verse 5 says this. This is Joseph speaking, and now do not be distressed, and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. Joseph could have held a grudge, and he didn't. When he saw his brothers, his heart was moved not with anger and hatred, but with love for his brothers. All of these things go to show that Joseph was a guy who was trying really hard. If you describe my life as Joseph's, I'd think that's pretty good. If your life was described like Joseph's, we would think we're doing pretty well. We're seeking God. We're trying to obey God. So Joseph was a guy who was trying hard. So what did it look like for him then to have God be sovereign? How did his life play out? Well, we saw bits and pieces of it there. Early on in his life, his dad loved him, which is a good thing, which you would expect of a young boy who loves the Lord and is seeking God. His dad loved him, but his brothers hated him. So this was really good, but this was really bad. His brothers then, because they hated him, sold him as a slave. He was out in the country. They took him. They talked about killing him, sold him as a slave, sent him away, believing they would never see him again, thinking that maybe these people who took him to sell him as a slave, maybe they would kill him. We don't care. We're rid of him. His brothers sold him into slavery. But then he got to Egypt and became the master of, or became the chief servant in this guy's house. And this guy was exceedingly wealthy, and so Joseph had a really good gig going. So he had this really bad thing, and then it turned into this kind of good thing. Well, then we saw he got thrown into jail, so now we're back down here. He did the right thing, and he got thrown into jail for it. But when he's in jail, it says that the jailer, kind of the same thing happened, saw that Joseph, he's a quality guy, kind of put him in charge of everything. So if he got to be in jail, Joseph's making the best out of it, and his situation in jail is pretty good. But then he sits there in jail for years, we're left to assume, because his friends forgot him, those people whose dreams they interpreted for him, went back to Pharaoh, forgot all about Joseph. But then after that, they remembered when Pharaoh had a dream and he brought Joseph, and Joseph got risen to really all of the power in all of Egypt. So how did Joseph's life turn out? This man who wanted to try hard and serve God, well, it was this mixture of up and down and really good and really bad. And they just kind of followed each other. And it's interesting to me that we tend to think, I tend to think, okay, we said that God is sovereign, that God alone has the right and the power to rule. We said that that applies to our lives, to our days, to what happens to us. We said that that's true. I suspect that as Christians, most of us think, yep, that's true, but I can in some way control God's control over me. In other words, if I do certain things, then God will do certain things. Now, there is some truth to that, but Joseph's story belies that. And if God has the right, the sole right and power to rule your life, what it means is that you can't control it. If we look at Joseph's story and say, here's a man who did the right thing all or most of the time, we tend to think as Christians, then God should have just done good things for him. But God didn't. There's this mixture, this wild bag. One of the things that we have to remember about God's sovereignty is if it's real, I can't control it at all. You and I cannot dictate to God, okay, God, you're in control, but you have to do this for me because I did this. Well, then God's no longer in control. I am, or you are. Joseph couldn't control his life, but God was controlling his life. In Genesis 45, verses 7 and 8, it said, God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So then, it was not you who sent me here, but God. God did things. God did them regardless of what Joseph was doing, regardless of what the people around him were doing. So what do we learn? Three quick lessons, I think, that we learn about this. God is sovereign. God alone has the right and the power to rule your life and mine. Joseph was a guy who believed that, accepted it, embraced it. His life still didn't kind of turn out probably the way that Joseph wanted it. What do we learn from that? Three things. Number one is that God's plans play out differently than ours. Remember we said that Joseph early on, God had plans for him, and it was those dreams Joseph had where his brothers were going to bow down to him? Joseph probably had an idea in his mind about how that was going to work. Okay, God's going to make me, you know, greater than my brothers, and my brothers are going to, you know, bow down to me. So Joseph probably thought in his mind, this is how that's going to work. I'm going to just, you know, continue to really work hard here, and Dad loves me, and he's going to raise me up, and he's going to put me in charge of the family someday, and I'll be the patriarch, and all of my brothers, because I'm so skilled, and because God is favoring me, my dad is going to just raise me up. And so he probably saw his life just kind of playing out right there in his family. It did not happen that way at all. That family sold him. Joseph, I cannot believe that Joseph thought the way that this dream is going to come to fruition is my brothers are going to hate me so much that rather than kill me, they decide to make some money by selling me, hoping that someone else kills me for them. I'm going to go to a place as a slave, get thrown in jail, and for most of my life, as a young man, most of my life, I'm going to spend either as a slave or a prisoner with kind of these bits of prosperity in between. That's probably not how we thought it was going to happen, but that's how it did happen, and it happened. The dream Joseph had with his brothers bowing down to him here in Genesis 42, 6 and 7, we see it happen where his brothers come. Now, Joseph was governor of the land. the one who sold grain to all the people. So when Joseph's brothers arrived, they bowed down to him with their faces to the ground. We see the dream happening, but it played itself out in a wildly different way than Joseph anticipated. God's plans play out differently than we think. And we can't dictate to God, okay, I'm going to embrace your plan, but this is how we're going to get there. God says, no, I am sovereign with your life, and so it might take a very different track than you think it does. That's one thing we learned. Here's a second thing we learned. Others can't change God's plans for our life. The people around us, your parents, your friends, your pastors, your boss, nobody can change God's plans. If they could, God would not be sovereign. God alone would not have the power and the right to rule your life. Many people stepped in and seemed to try to thwart God's plans for Joseph. His brothers hated him and sold him. His master in Egypt believed a lie. His master's wife lied about him. His master believed it, threw him in jail. His friends in jail who could have delivered him forgot about him. All the people around Joseph, many people around Joseph, failed him or worked hard to fight seemingly God's plans. But if God really is sovereign, nobody can change his plans. Here in Genesis 50, verses 19 and 20, but Joseph said to them, don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. You intended to harm me, but God meant it for good. If God is sovereign, if God alone has the right and the power to rule your life, nobody can change it, because they don't have the right and the power. Only God does. God has a plan for your life. If he's sovereign, others can't change it. Here's the third thing we learn. God's plans are bigger than ours. Always. Always God's plans are bigger than ours. I'm guessing as a 17-year-old boy, Joseph thought, I'm just going to take care of my family. You know, I'm going to do the right thing for my family. But God did something much, much greater. God saved a whole nation in Genesis 45. Verse 5, we've read this verse already. And now don't be distressed. This is Joseph speaking to his brothers. Do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. Joseph probably thought God's plan was just to do good for his family. God had a bigger plan for Joseph than that. God is sovereign. That means that he alone has the right and power to rule. It is good for you and I to embrace that and to work with God. But in the midst of it, it's good to remember that even as we do that, we can't dictate how it's going to look. God's plans play out differently. Others can't change them. God's plans are bigger. Next week, we're going to talk about the opposite. Samson, a guy who didn't try at all. In fact, kind of worked against God's plans. What does God's sovereignty look like with him? That's in Judges chapter 13 through 16. Maybe you want to read it this next week. Let's pray. Lord, thank you that you are sovereign. I'm glad that you alone have the right and the power to rule, and you rule my life and the life of all of us. Lord, help us to be men and women like Joseph who embrace it, and then help us, God, to remember that as our life plays out differently than we thought, it doesn't change the fact that you are sovereign. Your plans are big, they're powerful, and they will come to fruition. We want to trust you with that, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen.